two big stories we're tracking in Washington today. Talks on Capitol Hill to reach a deal for coronavirus relief appear to have broken down, and that is threatening to shut down the government later tonight.
Also, more than 100 House Republicans are asking the Supreme Court to overturn the results of the presidential election. Let's talk about all of this at our Politics Roundtable. We have Scott Wong, he's senior staff writer at The Hill, and Margaret Talov, who is politics and White House editor at Axios. Hello to both of you.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Hello.
President Trump wants the Supreme Court to uphold a lawsuit filed by the state of Texas that now has the support of 17 state attorneys general and, as I mentioned, more than 100 House Republicans. Other attorneys general and elected officials, including some Republicans, call the lawsuit baseless and dangerous. Does this lawsuit have any chance of moving forward? Scott?
I don't think so. You know, I've called it a Hail Mary pass, and I actually think the odds are much less than that, because a Hail Mary, you know, can actually happen. I think the chances are slim to none here. Despite having the 100 conservative House Republicans yesterday file this amicus brief backing the Texas Attorney General in this lawsuit, including the number two House Republican Steve Scalise, you still have a lot of skepticism that I'm hearing from Capitol Hill, not only from rank and file Republicans, but Republicans in the Texas delegation itself. Senator John Cornyn, he's a member of leadership and a former Attorney General in Texas, a former Texas Supreme Court Justice. He said it was a real head scratcher and did not really understand the legal theory of the case, and a number of other top Republicans from Texas have also expressed skepticism. And I think that the reason why we're seeing this is because the conservative base wants these Republicans to keep fighting for President Trump, and these Republicans are trying to stay in the good graces of President Trump and his family if they want to have some kind of future in the Republican Party.
Do you agree with that, Margaret? Is the support for this lawsuit because Republicans want all of that, because they're afraid?
Nobody thinks that the Supreme Court is going to move this forward. And in fact, the signatories are counting on that not happening. That's why they have signed on to this. This is pure politics. And but it's problematic because you can't just look at it as a one-off in politics that will go away on January 20th, even after President Trump is former President Trump and goes on with the rest of his life. This is just tremendously impactful. Anytime that you move the goalposts in a way like this, it creates a kind of a lower ceiling for action the next time around. So you're talking about here states trying to intercede in other states' elections, which there's no precedent for. You're talking about trying to go straight to the Supreme Court, for which there is no precedent. You're talking about basing this on, allegations that have not been proven. There is no evidence of fraud that would impact the election results here in any of these states or in this presidential election whatsoever. So it affects these lawmakers' credibility. It is an effort to disenfranchise millions of voters. It is a shake to the democratic system of governance. It furthers polarization in political parties. It undercuts President-elect Joe Biden's ability to govern. And it has massive implications for the ability of Congress to make deals and for the ability of the public to know who to trust and how to trust. So I think it's enormously consequential to the political system, even if it's not going to be consequential to a legal fight.
Well, Scott, I want to stress again that a majority of House Republicans are in support of this lawsuit. Play this out hypothetically for me, and this is not the situation we're in now, but it could have been. What would this conversation have sounded like if Republicans had control of the House and the Senate? What then?
Well, I'm not sure. But, you know, what's going to happen next is, you know, the reason this is all coming to a head right now is we are right before the Monday deadline where the electors from various states will convene in the Electoral College and they will cast their ballots, for whoever the voters in their states elected. In many cases, in many states, it will be Joe Biden, and Joe Biden will have the requisite 270 electoral votes. And then the other key date is on January 6th, when the House and the Senate will convene for a joint session of Congress. and then they will count those electoral college votes. And so there are some House Republicans who are now saying that they will try to challenge that vote counting process when it does come to Capitol Hill. It's again almost an impossible chance that anything will be overturned. But again, these Republicans want to show their voters and their base voters that they are fighting for President Trump. And the damage that Margaret was talking about is real, because 70% of Republican voters, according to recent polls, say that they really doubt the results of the election when there has been no evidence, that widespread voter fraud had occurred. So we're in a very, very unique and tricky situation here.
And Margaret, you did hint at what all this means for the future. What do you make of John Harris's argument at Politico, who wrote a piece this week saying that there won't be a Trump comeback in 2024 and that he'll lose power like other demagogues have in the past? Joe McCarthy in the 1950s, for instance.
Yeah, it's a really smart, thoughtful piece. Offers and reminds us a lot of the lessons of history. And I think it's very much in question, even inside President Trump's inner circle, whether or not he actually has the drive or discipline or desire to mount another bid for president 4 years from now, where he would be 4 years older than he is now. He has financial incentives to pursue. He is, raising money. He's considering media engagement. So that's TBD. But either way, the Republican Party will remain afterwards. The American political system will remain afterwards. And there is an entire generation of lawmakers elected over the course of the last 4 years, and to some extent before the last 4 years, who have embraced elements of President Trump's MO, both the policy arguments and the approach, the style, the use of social media, the populism. When they see how effective he has been at pushing the limits of executive power, of rallying a base around him, of movement, of breaking political norms, of choosing not to attempt to govern in a bipartisan manner, these experiments in how to test the limits of democracy may absolutely continue. And not just on the Republican side. I think, smart, liberal, progressive, younger Democrats who say the system is broken are also considering how they can adopt plays from the Trump playbook and try to make them their own. And so I think there are going to be repercussions for many generations of political cycles in America, even if they don't involve President Trump himself.
Let's talk about another big story today, and that's the stimulus. On the Senate floor this morning, Mitch McConnell blamed Democrats for holding up a coronavirus relief deal that he says includes an extension of unemployment benefits, money for vaccines, and help for small businesses, more money for state and local governments. Let's listen.
In what universe should emergency aid for small businesses be contingent on massive bailouts for state governments with no linkage to actual needs?
Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Democrats want that money to do things like prevent state government layoffs. And he says McConnell killed a relief deal to protect corporations from being sued during this pandemic. Scott, your thoughts on this? The entire country wants Congress to agree on something. What does it say when they're having so much trouble getting there?
Well, I've been thinking a lot about why we have not seen a big coronavirus relief package in the last several months, as the death toll has been mounting. We're averaging 3,000 deaths a day. Hospitals are at capacity. Job recovery is slowing as we get into these tough winter months. Homelessness is rising. Evictions are rising. It all, I think, stems back to the president and the lack of leadership happening in the White House right now, with the president focused on other things like overturning the election. It feels like Congress and the congressional leaders of both sides are really flailing. I mean, they're not finding any, much common ground. McConnell wants to punt two of these very prickly issues, liability protections for companies and state and local government funding, to the new year. Pelosi and Chuck Schumer say that's a non-starter. There are a bunch of side negotiations happening among bipartisan lawmakers in the House and Senate, but it really feels like the talks are all over the map. And I think Washington is really looking for leadership. Joe Biden is not yet in charge here. I think we will definitely see more coronavirus relief under the Biden administration. He has promised that. But really, this has been an enormous failure of Washington in general.
Yeah, there's an inside game and an outside game. And the inside game is all jockeying for how much leverage that each party can preserve heading into new administration, how much can Republicans put Biden in a box, et cetera. But if you are an American at home waiting for relief, this is just a confounding process. If you don't care, you want to know, are you going to get cash by the end of the month?
Right, right. Scott Wong is senior staff writer at The Hill, and that was Margaret Talov, is politics and White House editor at Axios. Thank you.